Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzin. And Jim, I had to start with this. Last week we said that it was going to be a short podcast because the game was canceled and Thanksgiving, everything else. And then ended up being the longest podcast we've had the year. So sorry for lying to you listeners.
Oops. And I will take a lot of the blame there because I feel like I stretched out that podcast, not intentionally per se, but I feel like I got on a couple of tangents and what planned to be a short podcast turned out to be a long one. So
whatever, we're having fun and it was a good one. So that's all that really matters. But this week we do have a football game to talk about. We've got number 10 Indiana coming to Wisconsin, which is ranked number 18 in the AP poll, number 16 in the college football playoff. Indiana is number 12 in the college football playoff, for that matter, to you. So lots of stuff to talk about, and then basketball is on a 3-0 start to the year, blowing out some lower level teams, which is nice to see. You don't want those games to be, you know, tight ones that you're worried about. So it's good to see the basketball team off to a hot start. So give you guys a quick show rundown. We're going to start with the Badgers offense against this Indiana defense. We saw last week how getting some pressure on Graham Mertz and some of those turnovers really bit Wisconsin and kind of costing that game. And those are going to have to be cleaned up against another defense that really attacks the ball and is going for pressure and turnovers really well this season. So we'll get into that, talk about this Badgers defense against Indiana's offense, which unfortunately lost Michael Penix Jr., their star quarterback, to a torn ACL. We'll talk about that. And then the new addition of Jack Tuttle into this game here, the backup quarterback that Wisconsin actually recruited back in the day. So some interesting stuff there. We'll do our Big Ten picks, which at this point, really, if you're not fading me and just betting the exact opposite way, you hate money and you don't want to have Jim is laughing. I don't know if you guys can hear Jim's having a good time, but you just hate money if you're not betting against me at this point.
Laughing at you. I'm laughing with you, just so you know.
That's fair. We'll get into basketball as well. Like I mentioned, they look like the real deal. Three games in here, three big blowouts, and getting a lot of guys involved. So lots of stuff to talk about there. So we'll get into all of that right after this. All right, Jim, let's get into this football game here. Wisconsin's offense going against its Indiana defense. You go back and look at 2 weeks ago, five turnovers really killed the Badgers because the defense for UW was up to par and was shutting down Northwestern all night. But you give any team five extra possessions, you're playing with fire. And then you kind of look at that going forward here with this Indiana game. They have 16 interceptions, the most in the country. Eight guys have picks, four of them from Jalen Williams, our top cornerback. So it's a whole secondary. It's a whole defense that's really attacking the ball in the air. To me, this game really does come down to how well Wisconsin protects the ball, not just Graham Mertz, but the fumbles, other things like that, but how well they protect the ball and how well they control the ball, because even with a backup quarterback, you don't want to get in a shootout with this Indiana team if you're Wisconsin. And I think that it's got to be kind of a blueprint kind of game for Wisconsin where you control the game with the run game and then, you know, get some big plays in the pass game as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, I totally agree. For me, it's how much did Graham Mertz learn from the Northwestern game, and can he avoid some of the footwork issues and the decision-making issues that he had in that game. Life was pretty easy for him those first two games in a lot of ways, and those were not good defenses he faced. Now he's facing a gauntlet: Northwestern, Indiana, and next week Iowa. Those are three pretty good defenses. So, you know, this is a test for him just to see how quickly he can grow and learn and respond to adversity. Obviously he wants to have that game back against Northwestern, and this one won't be easy for him.
Right. And you look at the Northwestern game, obviously you're down Kendrick Pryor and Danny Davis. It changes a lot of what you can do. And I don't entirely care what Paul Christ or Graham Mertz said about it. It limited what they were going to do offensively when they were down to, you know, wide receivers 3, 4, and 5. And then they don't really have anybody behind those guys. Kendrick Pryor is going to be available this week. We're still waiting to hear about Danny Davis. Monday, Paul Christ said it was going to be later in the week that they found out. We'll see. It's going to be tough if you don't have at least, I mean, you assume Pryor's back, but if you don't have a healthy Pryor and Jake Ferguson, who kept going in and out of the game in the second half, took some big hits, looked like he was dealing with a shoulder injury. If you don't have a healthy Davis or a healthy Ferguson, it puts your offense in a really tough spot in the passing game, and you're going to really need to rely on the offensive line in the run game, because you don't want the same situation where you're going against a good secondary that's attacking the ball, and you're going against that with receivers that aren't, you know, the top that you have.
Yeah, I think if they just had one, either Pryor or Davis against Northwestern, that would have made a world of difference. And now if you're looking at getting one of those guys back and then not having a healthy Ferguson or not having Ferguson at all, you're kind of right back with the same issue you faced down in Evanston. And it's less than ideal, certainly, and especially against a defense that is really good. I mean, going back, this Indiana defense, for years, they've always had playmakers on offense, and the missing piece has been a sound defense. And they're good. I mean, they're legit. I've watched them a couple of times this year. It's a really fun defense to watch. And it's kind of made this a complete team for once, and easily the best team Tom Allen's had down there. So this is an exciting matchup. I know we're going to get to this, but it would have been a whole lot more exciting if Michael Penix was in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a tough thing, because if this kind of goes to the overall story of this game, this was a big chance for Wisconsin to jump up a lot in the college football playoff rankings. I'm not sure if they were to win this game, they're going to get the same boost because Michael Penix isn't there. So I think that kind of plays into the whole narrative of this game. And then you look at the race here in the Big Ten. Ohio State, I guess, is just saying hell or high water. Don't care what we're dealing with internally. We're playing those last two games, and we're going to give ourselves a shot. So they have the inside track for the East championship, but if they slip up at all or aren't able to play one of these games, Indiana is the East champion. So, I mean, there's a lot on the line for both teams here. And it's just tough because it's a reality of this year. And I know every program is going through it, but if you're Indiana, you've been dealing with some COVID stuff. They're down like 14 or 15 guys going into that Maryland game last week. And then you lose Penix. It's just kind of one on top of the other. And it just makes it tough, and it's just emblematic of how weird this year is, and just how difficult it is to try to make it through a season, even a short one like the Big Ten's.
You know, the scenario that I really wanted to see play out, and it still might, but it's looking less and less likely, is Ohio State not having enough games and being relegated to the second place game, and then having that be against Wisconsin. So you're looking at a Big Ten championship game of Indiana versus Northwestern. And then a runner-up game of Wisconsin, Ohio State, which would have blown away the other game in terms of ratings, right?
Oh, for sure.
And it would have been the one game that everybody wanted to watch, and it just would have been so 2020 to have that scenario play out. And like I said, it still might. Who knows? But I kind of was looking forward to that. And plus, I'd like to see Wisconsin, Ohio State. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'd like to see that match. As much as I want to see Wisconsin, Minnesota, if that happens, I really would like to see Wisconsin, Ohio State. And I think the Big Ten would have loved that scenario too.
And the other factor of it too is that even if they don't get enough games, right now Ohio State's still in a position to be in the college football playoff. They're number four in the rankings right now. So that Ohio State-Wisconsin game would be a de facto playoff game again for Ohio State. So just a lot of crazy scenarios right now in this Big Ten because of not only the COVID cancellations, but the corner that they backed themselves into with the schedule that they created and the situation they're in. So one of those, you know, made your bed, now you got to lie in it situations for the Big Ten. But getting back to
this. Taking us off track, by the way. I've taken us completely off track. This is how our podcast ended up too long. I'm going off script. Sorry.
It's good stuff, though. Getting back to this Wisconsin offense, though. I mentioned the interceptions for Indiana, 16 that leads the country. But Graham Mertz said it on Monday, and I went back and looked at a lot of these interceptions. That's true. So many of these interceptions come from the pressure that Indiana's creating. They've got 20 sacks in six games, which is, you know, 2.5 a game, basically. 12 guys have sacks, so they're getting pressure from everywhere. You know, they're blitzing linebackers, they're blitzing corners off the edge. The defensive line's doing a good job getting off of blocks. It's really interesting to see what Tom Allen and his defense are doing because, as you mentioned, that's kind of been the missing piece. And I think now that he has some talent on the back end, he's just kind of letting it fly in that front seven because he knows He's got enough guys that can cover on the back end that it can make up for some mistakes or the pressure doesn't get there. But the pressure is going to give you more chances for, you know, strip sacks, interceptions, quarterbacks just throwing the ball away. It's kind of a aggressive just seems like too basic of a word, but it's a defense that just basically challenges your offense to be perfect, play in, play out. And that's something that's going to be really fun to watch, that matchup between Wisconsin's offensive line and the tight ends and the backs blocking versus all these different pressures that Indiana brings.
You've studied this way more than I have. Fair to say, Northwestern had a solid defense, but was not one that you would necessarily call, like the word you used was aggressive, right? Just solid. That I would describe Northwestern's defense as solid, just at all three levels, but not necessarily in your face aggressive. They just kind of do things solidly. Whereas Indiana's probably a little bit more, they're going to try to force you into mistakes and not to use that word again, but aggressive. Is that fair? Is that a fair comparison? It's just that two really good defenses, but do things differently.
Yeah. And I think Northwestern kind of has that mindset of, if you drive down the field in 16 plays, getting 3 or 4 yards a play, all right, good job, tip your hat. Indiana's going to force your hand. They're going to make you beat a blitz. They're going to make you complete a pass down the field with the way they go. And I think one of the things that we haven't had a chance to talk to the coordinators yet, we're doing that a little bit later today, but the thing that I think is going to be the biggest challenge for Wisconsin is picking up all these delayed blitz situations that Indiana brings, because their linebackers, if they kind of read that their back or their tight end is staying in the block, they come from different angles and they kind of, and obviously I'm not in the room, I don't know, but it looks like they kind of have free reign to pick a lane and get to the quarterback. They don't have to, maintain a gap or have a responsibility that way if they're reading pass or they're reading their guys not going out in a route. So it does kind of put the pressure on the offensive line to really be aware of where guys are at and, mid play, where guys are coming from. And then if you've been watching Wisconsin football for long enough, you'll see plays where, the center or the guard maybe doesn't have somebody to block initially. So then they'll go give help to a good pass rusher or just go get hit on somebody. They've got to really be patient and continue watching a linebacker or a corner maybe coming off the edge to make sure that a delayed blitz doesn't get Graham Mertz in a lot of trouble or, potentially cause a turnover, because that's really what Indiana goes for in any passing situation.
I'm not sure what to make of this offensive line yet. I don't know how you feel. Asking you to give a grade on the spot is probably unfair, but how would you evaluate this line to date?
It's good. I think I'm writing about that today. They haven't had a lot of chances to gel yet. They've had three games, but you look at, they've only had two games of the line that's currently starting. And Joe Rudolph has always said, that's a position that's got to gel. It's got to have some cohesiveness and some reps together. But the way the season has gone, where you've had practices canceled, games canceled, and then, you get started in a game prep and then Minnesota last week gets canceled. They just haven't had the chance to really find a flow and kind of get into a rhythm. I know that applies to every position, but a wide receiver, that doesn't quite matter as much as when you're trying to work five guys all together as a line. So I think they're probably at like a B-minus level right now, B level, but has A talent and A experience, really, because I just did the math a little bit ago. There's 168 combined games played and 92 starts across that line. So there's experience and there's talent there. I think it just still needs a little bit more time to develop together and then be able to put it on the field. And maybe a week like they just had, where they've had basically 2 weeks to get prepared for this Indiana game, is where that kind of starts to show.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know where to make this point, but I do think the one you just brought up is a good one, is having 2 weeks to prepare. I'm interested to see how that works for both sides of the ball. I just think that's such a huge advantage to get a head start on opponents. We saw that versus Michigan, where you could kind of get a jump start. So I would think for this offense going against an aggressive defense, that'll kind of push the envelope. That'll help. And on the flip side, once we start talking about the Indiana offense, that has a lot of playmakers, it's got to help Jim Leonard to have a head start, a couple days head start on getting his team ready for what they're going to see on Saturday.
For sure. And one last point about this offense, I want to get your take on this, Jim. At what point are the Badgers done with the committee experiment in the backfield? I know that they've had the injuries. Garendo's been in and out. they've had these missed games. But when you just look at the tape of the last 2 weeks, Michigan, Northwestern, there is just a significant difference in my eyes to how Jalen Berger runs the ball and the productiveness that they have when he has the ball in his hands compared to a Watson or a Garendo or even a Groshek, even though Groshek's doing well in his kind of pseudo third down back kind of, I was about to say gadget, but like just a different change of pace type of guy in the backfield. But to me, I just, Jalen Berger has earned in a short amount of time in my eyes, more reps than the other guys. And I think you've got to start feeding him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess my only hesitation would be like, so he had 15 carries against Northwestern. Is that right? If I remember correctly. Yep. So is he I guess what's the number that we're hoping to see or wanting to see from him? Is he a 25 carry guy? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Jonathan Taylor was built a little differently. I think he could hold up. And maybe that's the coach's hesitation. I don't know, but I guess that'd be my only question is, you know, can he absorb 10 more carries a game? I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe it's not 25, but I think you've got to have him out there a little bit more than what they've had so far, because you look at what he can do not only as a runner but as a receiver out of the backfield. That's been something that even since he started being recruited, that was one of the big things. Like, he played a lot of receiver in high school, and he's a guy that can give you both of those. And I just think that maybe it's not 25 carries, but maybe it's 20 total touches. So maybe that 15 carry stays about the same, but he gets a couple of more catches because he's out there for some more snaps. I just think that at a certain point, the committee in the backfield's got to be a little bit more Jalen Berger, because talent-wise and execution of plays, I mean, he's got 6 yards a carry right now, and the next highest on the team is 4. And I get it, it's 2 yards, but 2 yards every play you touch the ball, that it adds up. It's significant.
Yeah, there's a certain eye test to it, though, right? I mean, you like Watson will carry the ball, and a 4 yard gain will be a 4 yard gain. Berger will have the same type of play, and suddenly 4 yards is 8 yards or 10 yards. So,
yeah,
he's just hitting the hole faster. He seems to have a little bit better feel. Not Taylor-esque. I don't want to ever make that comparison, but you do, you can see he's got pretty good vision, especially for a guy who's played 2 games, right?
Yeah.
So I would definitely agree with you that I think that carry total will continue to go up, and whether it's a touch total, like you said. I mean, I would like to see him, because they used him in the past game, and that would have been, you know, that would have been something maybe a little different down Northwestern when things were not going well in the past game, to get him out in the perimeter a little bit and see what he can do.
Yeah, and challenge those linebackers, because I thought one of the things that, because of the wide receiver situation, is they didn't really make the linebackers play outside the box as much as maybe they should have. And Northwestern has some great linebackers, but try to get them a little bit more side to side than straight north and south, because that was, you know, that's what Northwestern's linebackers are good at. They're good at stuff in the run. And even though I thought Berger did a good job, you know, letting the offensive line develop blocks and get to that second level and hitting holes, I thought that the Wisconsin offense could have challenged them a little bit more side to side with guys like Berger. But, you know, that's one of those, I think they go all kind of goes back to that offense was limited in what they could do. And then you watch Graham Mertz struggle like he was. They were trying to put him in some little more safe scenarios and not try to put everything on him given how he was playing. So I think a lot of things kind of went wrong for him that game that they've got to get cleaned up against this Indiana team.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, not having Davis and Pryor hurt the pass game, but I think it probably hurt the run game just as much, because they do use those guys effectively on jet sweeps, and Dunn/Krumholz just didn't have the same effect on those types of plays.
Absolutely. All right, so let's go over here to the defense against this Indiana team. We've been talking about it. No Michael Penix. Just stinks, because not only was it hurts the resume win for Wisconsin if they were able to win on Saturday, number one, but number two, he's just a fun player to watch. I mean, Jim and I have talked about him a few times on the podcast, like potential Heisman dark horse candidate. And it would just put him in a great challenge for this defense going against Penix and the way that this offense is kind of rolling. But you kind of transition into Jack Tuttle taking over under center. He's a former 4-star recruit, you know, pocket passer, number 5 in the country in the 2018 class. He had offers from Alabama, LSU, Wisconsin, ends up going to Utah. did spring ball and one semester there, then transfers to Indiana. Obviously, you know, you're going to try to hype your kid up and do those things if you're Indiana, but you look at some of the things that their coaches said about him. It's like, he's always been preparing like a starter. He's got starter arm talent. We just had a guy in Michael Penix that's, you know, a dynamic playmaker that we had to have out there. I think there's a lot of faith that Jack Tuttle can engineer this offense in a little bit different way than Penix did, but still keep it rolling like it was.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit comparable to Wisconsin when Jack Cohn went down. You still had a really good backup there, different in some ways, but a guy you trusted. And I think Indiana feels the same way. It's again, it's different. They're very different styles, but still a guy who's got a pretty good resume coming into college and has been, you know, effective in limited action. You know, he seems like, you know, when you talk about Wisconsin recruiting him, he seems very much like the type of guy Paul Chryst would like, right? 6'4", you know,
big arm
pocket guy. Yeah, I think he would have been a pretty decent fit here. But I, you know, going back to Penix, I'm really bummed. Like, this is a little before your time, going back to your childhood, but Indiana had a guy, Antoine Randall L.
at quarterback. Yeah.
Very different than Penix. I mean, this Randall L. is more of a runner, but he was a guy when Indiana wasn't very good necessarily that you still wanted to see. You wanted to turn on Indiana and watch. And he came here 1 year, and they laid like a 62-31 whipping on Wisconsin at Camp Randall. Okay. And he was just fun to watch. And Penix the same way. I watched him a lot this year, and just a real fun guy to watch. I think you and I even talked, I think probably off the podcast, about considering him for Heisman voting, just because he's that type of dynamic player. And so I'm bummed. Yeah, I'm bummed that I don't get to see him in person.
And I think the biggest element that Indiana loses, that you look at the construction of their team, they're intending to air it out. But when they do run the ball, it's pretty straightforward stuff with Stevie Scott, their running back. But having the option of the run, the quarterback run game and the option run game with Penix really added to what they could do on the ground, because it wasn't like Penix was running for 75 or 100 yards a game or anything like that. But he would pick up first downs, and then he would make sure the defenses were honest and keep the numbers how they wanted in the box. I don't think Jack Tuttle is going to be able to do that. I think that kind of plays into Wisconsin's formula on defense this year, which, you know, they've been so effective against the run, and they've, you know, a top defense on both sides, run and pass. But I think the fact that you don't have that quarterback run game kind of allows the defense to really rely on the defensive line and the inside backers to worry about the run game. And then everybody else worries about these receivers, and they need to, because there's a ton of talent on the outside for Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good group of receivers. I mean, I think when I did the previews before the season, Wop Fillier was the big man on campus in my Indiana capsule, but he's certainly not alone. They've got good receivers around him. They got a good tight end. You mentioned Stevie Scott. This is a team that has a lot of playmakers, and starting quarterback or backup quarterback, you know, regardless of who's in there, I really do expect this to be the by far the biggest test for the Wisconsin defense, because they really haven't gone against a good offense yet, right? I mean,
yeah,
we kind of praised Peyton Ramsey for being a solid version of a quarterback at Northwestern, but Michigan's offense wasn't very good. Illinois was not very good at the time. So, yeah, this is a big test for this defense.
You mentioned the other receivers with Fillier. Ty Freifogel is having like not only all Big Ten season. If he had enough games, he'd be having an All-American level season. And he's doing it against some of the best. I mean, they played Ohio State, and Freifogel really couldn't be guarded, helped them keep it close, especially in the second half. And then you mentioned the tight end, Peyton Hendershot, a really tough red zone target, and definitely the best tight end that Wisconsin has played yet this season. I think that there's a lot of chances here for Wisconsin secondary and linebackers to kind of step up, because as you mentioned, this is their biggest test. They've had a week and a half now to prepare for it. You've got to go out there and make sure that preparation was, you know, put to good use, and that you are kind of living up to what it looks like you are, which is a top tier defense. But now you've got a real challenge here, and you're at home. Everything's kind of broken your way this week. Outside of one thing we'll get to in a second, but everything's kind of shaping up for you defensively to have a strong showing against a good offense. You just got to go out and, you know, make sure it happens now.
Agreed. Let's get to that one thing that we, Rashad Wildwood is not coming back. How shocked were you when that announcement was made?
I was shocked, but then the second I was reading it through his stuff and started thinking about, or his Twitter post, and started thinking about the situation he's in, I got it. Because, all right, so he has a shoulder injury in the second quarter against Northwestern. Hasn't been announced, and I haven't gotten confirmed on this, but it looked like it was significant. I think he was going to miss a decent amount of time. So Wisconsin's got two or three guaranteed games left, right, and then a bowl game. And unless they're in a New Year's Six game, that bowl game is going to happen sometime here in December. So let's say if he was out 6 weeks, that's his season. So I think this was more of a move like, all right, I'm done this season. Let me just start getting ready for the draft because I want to go to the draft. Let's start getting ready for it a month ahead of time because I'm not going to be able to play anyway. So I think there's a combination of he was already going to make this move in the offseason to begin with, and then the fact that his playing season this year was over kind of said to him, all right, let's just make the jump now. I'm not sure how that's going to affect his rehab or what he's got to do in that sense, but I was stunned to see the initial announcement, especially on the Friday morning after Thanksgiving. But then as I kind of started thinking about it, I was like, oh, all right, that makes sense.
What I'm very deep into basketball season, so I haven't had a chance to look this up. What type of prospect, NFL prospect, is he?
It's not great. And it's mostly because, you know, at corner, it's like you've either got to be one of those, like, just outstanding, like, jump off the page athletes, or you got to have a ton of game tape. Now, we haven't – I don't know what Rashad Wildwood can run, a 40 or vertical jump or stuff like that, but I don't think he's going to be – so exceptionally above everybody else that's in his corner class that he jumps off the page that way. And then the biggest problem is he just doesn't have a ton of tape because he had that one game in the Illinois to start with, had a great game against Josh Amadebebe. Then he gets hurt, or he gets COVID, has to miss the Michigan game, and then gets hurt in the first half of the Northwestern game. So this was his first year starting and gets a game and a half of tape. It's just, it's tough. I don't know where he'd have to do really well to me in the pre-draft process to probably be a day three pick. I think that's probably his range. So I hope it works out for him. Every time I interacted with him, he was a really nice guy, but I think this was a pretty big bet on himself, and we'll see how it plays out for him.
I do think it was telling that coming into the season, think Fan Hicks had the most experience, right? And Caesar Williams was probably next.
Right.
And Wild Goose had kind of emerged as the guy Jim Leonard trusted the most from that group. Is that fair to say? I mean, it certainly his actions in terms of who he played.
Right. And the big thing that Leonard kind of hyped up was the fact that Wild Goose could play on the outside and in the slot. It ended up working out that he covered Amadebebe almost exclusively against Illinois, so then put Fayon Hicks in the slot. And then after Wild Goose went down, Hicks went back into the slot against Northwestern. But I think that the versatility and all the things that Wild Goose could do really had Leonard excited to kind of deploy him in different ways and be able to shadow the top receivers and let the rest of the secondary kind of fall in behind that. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge this week, is you don't have that guy that maybe you would say, hey, Freifogel is your guy all night, or, you know, you go cover on a third and short where we think they're going to try to do something quick, go cover Filior in the slot and let the rest of the guys, you know, get Freifogel and other people. But I'm very interested to see how the secondary kind of adjusts the way that they rotate and match up on different guys, because without Wild Goose, who you've kind of at least set it is your top guy and your most versatile guy. I would imagine you want to give Freifogel, Filio, or some of these receivers some different looks so that they're not going against the same guy play in and play out.
Yeah. I mean, they always say next man up here, and a big moment for Dante Burton. Samar Melvin's gotten a little taste of playing time. I think they like those guys, but they just haven't had enough experience to probably be able to trust them. And, one or both of them is going to have to play significantly from this point forward. So it'll be a good test.
This is definitely one of those situations where it stinks even more not being able to see any practice, because we've seen some things in games like Dante Burton had some really good coverage, but then gets beat for a touchdown on a really good pass and throw against Northwestern. Then Samar Melvin kind of came in, was splitting reps with him throughout that second half against Northwestern. I just wonder what that battle is and kind of what the person has to do to emerge in that. And maybe it comes down to just how they play in the games, if practice is equal. I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. And usually you're not saying like who the third corner is a huge piece to this, but we've kind of seen with the amount of nickel that they have to play against some of these teams, it is a really key position, and teams will exploit it if you don't have a great option or have somebody that's effective at least at that spot.
And this week especially, right? I mean, Indiana's going to try to exploit that, and they have the weapons to exploit that. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right, Jim, let's jump into our Big Ten picks here. Another tough week for me last week, kind of a theme for the year. 1-4 last week for me, 2-3 for you. Jim is now 17-17-2 on the year. I'm 11-23-2. Yikes. And then going into this week, we only have 5 games to pick because obviously the Minnesota-Northwestern game is canceled and Michigan is still dealing with some COVID stuff. So that game does not have a line as of Wednesday morning. So we got 5 picks to jump into here. We'll start with Nebraska at Purdue. Purdue coming off a tough loss to Rutgers, and when Nebraska last week, oh yeah, they lost to Iowa the day after Thanksgiving. They actually played pretty well in that Iowa game. I gotta give them credit for that. So Purdue is a 2-point favorite at home. Jim and I are both on Purdue. I know that the Purdue defense isn't great. I just haven't seen enough from Nebraska's defense to get key stops, especially when you look at this wide receiver duo from Purdue. I think they'll be able to cover 3 at home. That's really why I'm picking Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick Nebraska on the road. It's hard to pick Nebraska anywhere at this point, but especially on the road. I feel like I've lost every time I've picked Purdue this year, so I'm a little reluctant, but I'm going with the Boilermakers. Interesting tidbit from this game is Purdue defensive coordinator Bob Diaco was on Nebraska's staff for one disastrous season.
Yes, he was.
So they can get some payback against him.
For sure. All right, jumping to the next game here. We got Penn State going to Rutgers. I was stunned by this line. Penn State is an 11.5-point favorite on the road at Rutgers. And I know Penn State finally got a win against Michigan, but Michigan's terrible. And 10.5 or 11.5 points is crazy. We are both on Rutgers. And I just think that Rutgers is playing extremely hard without a ton of talent. And I just can't see them losing by 12 points or more at home. So I'm going with Rutgers.
I agree. I mean, Greg Schiano, I thought he would turn that program around. They're not that point yet, but he certainly has them competitive way earlier than I expected.
Did you see he had a 100-yard kick return touchdown last week?
Did Cruikshank? I missed that.
Aaron Cruikshank.
Did he really?
He did. Yeah. It was a really impressive return, and not surprising because obviously he did that at Wisconsin, but
bad he didn't stay here because he could have helped. I mean, in a lot of areas, I really think that they could have incorporated him more into as a receiver, and you know, you hate to lose playmakers. And so that's a bad loss.
Yeah, big absolutely. Loss. I completely agree. And you look at the receiver group they have, obviously DK is kind of stepped up, but the fact that they've got Pryor and Davis and then DK and not a lot else. He definitely would have helped a lot.
Yeah, you wrote a really good, your follow-up the Northwestern game was just kind of the lack of development / recruiting in that group. I thought that was a really good, really smart story coming off that loss, because it was certainly very evident that some of these young guys that we've been waiting on to step up just haven't for whatever reason. And certainly are going to need to by this time next season starts, because Pryor and Davis are gone. So it's been kind of done. Right.
That's a definite off season storyline, but it's already playing itself out here in 2020. All right, next game we got Ohio State going to Michigan State. Ohio State is a 24-point favorite. Shockingly, even though they're dealing with COVID and had to cancel last week's game, we are both on Ohio State. I'm assuming at least some of their stars are going to play or are able to play. And I just think that if you've got, I'd say, like 75 to 80% of your starters out there, if you're Ohio State, you're able to blow out Michigan State. Just the Spartans just do not have a ton. And I say that coming off that huge win they had against Northwestern last week, where it was like, what happened to the defense that just shut down Wisconsin for four quarters? But
yeah, I kind of called that. I didn't call necessarily Michigan State winning that game, but I did think Northwestern would have a hard time coming back after a big win. Wisconsin over the years has tended to, you know, the wear and tear of that game, the physicality sometimes has effect on opponents the week after. And I thought that's kind of what would happen with Northwestern. And it did. But I'm still going against Michigan State this week, in part because I don't trust them to do it 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Really lack this year's consistency. They've shown in the Michigan game and again last week that they can be competitive in small doses, but consistency is not there yet, and that's why I don't trust them against Ohio State.
Yeah, after Michigan State beat Michigan, then they just go out and get housed by Iowa. Wasn't that the week after? So yeah, I'm with you there. That's a good. I like that trend pick now even more. So next one here, we got Iowa going to Illinois. Iowa is a 13.5-point favorite. It's the only game that we disagree on this week. I'm going to take Iowa. Jim is on Illinois. I just think Iowa has figured some things out on both sides of the ball. And I think the biggest thing is that they've realized we can't just ask Petras to throw it deep every play and make something work. They really have committed to the ground, getting some other tight ends going again, kind of the usual Iowa formula. And they're playing solid defense. And I know Illinois's kind of flashed a few weeks here. I just think Iowa's a better team. And I think two touchdowns is right about where I think it's going to be. If this was 14 or 14 and a half, I probably would have gone with Illinois, but two touchdowns I think is what it's going to be.
You're probably right. And I don't feel confident at all about this pick, so I'll add zero analysis to it, but I do want to get your take on the clapping controversy. What'd you think of that?
That is the most Nebraska.
Yeah.
Nebraska thing to complain about the other side clapping, where it's just like, hey man, if you think that's really changing what you're doing, so go hike, change what, like, if you think that's going to, number one, that doesn't affect your center snapping the ball over people's heads or skipping it to the quarterback. But then two, like, if that's really what is derailing your entire offense, then your offense wasn't good to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing too, is like Nebraska is just keeps finding ways to have bad PR and, mm-hmm. and stuff that makes the program look bad, and they just can't get out of their own way. Not only are they not winning games consistently or at all in some cases, they're just, every move they make from a PR standpoint just makes the program look bad. And I can't figure out why they can't just shut their mouths sometimes.
It's sad. Just they live on this tradition, right? And then they just consistently embarrass it every chance they get. So finish up here with Indiana coming to Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a 14-point favorite. Started around a touchdown when the Michael Penix situation was still kind of up in the air, but it looked like that injury was going to be significant. Then it jumped up to 14 after Penix was ruled out for the season. 14 points is a lot. Jim and I are both on Indiana. I wouldn't pick Wisconsin by 14 unless I had assurances that Danny Davis was going to play and that Jake Ferguson was completely healthy. And even then, I would still look long and hard at it. So I think Indiana is going to be able to keep it close. As good as this Wisconsin defense is, this is their toughest test. And these receivers are going to make a play or two eventually. So it's not going to be a shutout or anything like that. So I definitely think that there's going to be some points scored both ways. So I'm on Indiana being able to cover 14.
I agree. If Indiana can stick around at Ohio State and make that a competitive, you know, one touchdown game, I think they can do the same thing, even with a backup quarterback, who, again, I'll reiterate, don't think is that big of a step down. I mean, different than Penix, who was a star in the making, yes, but I still think Jack Tuttle's a solid backup quarterback and would probably start on a lot of teams in this league.
Right. And the fact that Indiana knew on Sunday morning that Michael Penix's ACL was torn. So Jack Toto has been a full week of number one reps, all that preparation, everything like that. I think he's going to be able to come in and play at least decently. I think Wisconsin's defense is going to challenge him with some things, but I agree with you. It's not going to be a massive drop off. It's not going to be, you know, like the Broncos having to play a practice squad wide receiver at quarterback because the NFL
says, let's talk about that. Speaking of tangents, that's your team. I don't know if our listeners know this, but that is your team. What a mess that was. I didn't watch any of the game.
I watched every down, Jim. It was rough.
I did follow it on Game Tracker. Like, I made a point of it, and I'm just like, I'm texting friends. I'm like, Denver has like 9 passing yards right now. But the thing was, like, not like Taysom Hill was lighting it up. That game from ball in the air completion standpoint was just a catastrophe. It's funny to watch the stats.
It was basically like watching Wisconsin and Iowa in like 99, where they like both teams were just trying not to pass. And the thing is, the league basically said, hey, Denver, you're not a playoff team and you screwed up and broke protocol, so we're going to make an example of you, which I didn't like of my team, but I kind of get. But the fact that Pat Shurmur, who's the Broncos offensive coordinator, said, have a practice squad wide receiver starting at quarterback. Let's make sure his first 5 passes are 20 yards downfield. Like, all right, set him up for some failure and chuck it up against a good secondary. That makes sense. And it wasn't like the guy was – his name's Kendall Hinton. He wasn't even a consistent quarterback in college. He switched to wide receiver when he was at Wake Forest, which, you know, that's an ACC powerhouse. Oh, my God. That was so awesome.
Best part to me is how they tried to get the quality control coach
eligible. That's when you knew, hey, a guy who hasn't played organized football in 3 years is a better option than what we have. That's what he knew was going to be ugly. And I felt bad for guys like Melvin Gordon, who had to take Wildcat snaps and other stuff, because it's like, yeah, Melvin Gordon is a little bit used to playing without a great quarterback, but like a non-quarterback, that's just not going to happen.
That would have been a great snarky line on Twitter, is that Melvin Gordon had to play with Tanner McAvoy as a quarterback, so he should be used to this.
That's fair. I thought about it, but I didn't want to throw XFL legend Tanner McAvoy under the bus. And I just did. All right, let's jump into basketball here, Jim. 3-0 Badgers, number 4 team in the country, whooped up on Green Bay last night, or Tuesday night, I should say, because you guys are going to be hearing this on Thursday. Before we get into like the game or the season itself or where the Badgers stand right now, was that like the fastest game that you've ever been to or been to in a long time? I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was transcribing during the game, but it was over in like an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't notice it. I just looked it up. In fact, it was an hour and 49 minutes.
Which is
remarkably fast. And I didn't really notice it in the moment. It was kind of a weird thing for me because I did a halftime radio interview with Mike Lucas. So that kind of took away some of my writing time. So I was scrambling a little bit in the second half and didn't really notice how quickly the game was going. But man, I'll tell you this, I love 4 p.m. starts. I'm sure there are a lot of fans that are ticked off that, you know, I think a couple of them on Twitter was like, I didn't even know this game started at 4 o'clock, to which I replied, thanks for reading. But seriously, like, I'm sure there are a lot of people that had to work till 5 and didn't get to watch this game. But selfishly, love the 4 o'clock starts. Love them even more when the game goes an hour and 49 minutes.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So Tyler Wall last night, you guys have been writing about him a lot because he's getting a lot of buzz and a lot of hype coming out of the preseason, his physical growth, the muscle that he put on. But I just thought that, overall, he's like a Swiss Army knife, and it's just such a cliche phrase, but he literally can do everything for the team. He can score, he can rebound, he can play the post if he needs to. He can defend other teams' posts. I think there's just such a value in a guy like that maybe he's not an A-plus at any of those things, but the fact that he's a B-plus at all of them makes him just such a weapon in college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a poster boy for this program.
Yeah.
Tyler Wall is it. A lot of people said that about Brad Davison, too, when he got here, but Tyler Wall is in the same way. He's just all the things you mentioned are just great. Timing was great on this. 11 points, 15 rebounds, his first career double double. Because I'm writing about him for later in the week. You know, the story that everybody's done about his offseason work, I kind of held off on that and and I'm going to write that later this week. I talked to his parents. I talked to his AAU coach who worked on his shooting in the offseason with him. And then I talked to his personal trainer back home in Minnesota, just about some of the work he did just to get stronger. So hopefully that's an interesting story. I found out a lot about Tyler, and so I'm going to run that leading into the Marquette game later this week.
Very nice. All right. So, Jim, obviously you're on this team more. I mean, it's a better view when you get to watch it from the game as opposed to your couch. But what's your take on this team overall through three games here? Like, obviously it's been lesser competition, but is there something that's kind of stuck out to you at these first three games?
Yeah, I mean, I think the freshmen and Ben Carlson and Johnny Davis, how they've kind of gotten in and contributed, just that's a positive as far as I'm concerned. I think this team is legitimately nine deep, and you don't lose a lot when different guys come in. I talked a lot about flexibility and versatility with this lineup, and Greg Gard talked about that going into the season. I think we've seen a lot of that. There was a lot of talk about can Reavers and Potter play together, and in the first two games, those guys played well together. I don't think they necessarily didn't play well together last night, but as Greg Gard noted after the game, their best lineup was the smaller lineup, and I think with Tyler Wall at the four. Which I think you're going to see against certain opponents this year is they're going to go smaller, and you're not always going to have Potter and Reavers on the floor at the same time. And that's going to be strange in a lot of ways, because that's two of your better offensive players. But I just think the dynamic of smaller lineups is going to work a little better against some opponents. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the thing that stand out. It's been mostly positive. They didn't play well in the second half, the first two games, but man, they were up by like so much after at halftime, yeah, that I can see how they let their foot off the pedal a little bit, and Greg Gard was tinkering. I thought last night was a complete effort, and that was good to get that headed into the Marquette game. I think was a good step, but we're going to find out a lot about this team Friday. That's Marquette, Louisville next week, Northern Iowa's coming up, and that's a team that's started slowly but is still better than any of the three teams they've faced. They've got 19 days to start a Big Ten play, so we're going to find out a little bit more in the next week and a half. But so far, so good. I think this team has been really impressive.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think I'm actually stealing this from my friend Zach Berger, because he mentioned it when we were talking about the game last night. But it seemed like this team has, in three games, taken a lot more early shot clock shots. Like, there's just a ton of confidence. And I feel like it comes from not only having the experience, but just a ton of belief in the guys around you. Like, hey, we set a screen, or we got this open shot right away for, let's say, Demetri Trice or Brad Davis in the corner, fire it. Like, let's just make something happen. We can get the rebound. If not, maybe it's because they knew who they were playing, and if a couple of possessions go awry, they can do whatever they want. But to me, I think that just shows that this team is really gelled and knows who they are and is confident in what they can do.
Yeah, and every year, like, I feel like I write this story every year that, oh, we're going to play faster, because that's kind of the theme every year, and then it doesn't necessarily happen. And they've said it again this year. They're going to play faster. And I think we have seen that a little bit in the first three games, pushing the ball up court. I think, going back to Tyler Wall, it's a huge bonus or benefit when he can grab a rebound and just go, because he's got guard skills. So if you got him leading the break and pushing the ball up court, that allows Trice and Davison to get to the wings. And I think like a guy like Davison, who was like 20 of 42 from 3-point range over the last eight games last year, he's just kind of picked up where he left off, and he's one of those guys that's shooting early in the shot clock. And I do think it's going to, I'm curious to see how that changes against better opponents. If sure, what you said was accurate, that they'll be a little more careful. They're going to feed the post probably more. They're going to try to look for great shots instead of good shots. But I think that's one of the things that's notable about this team is that, they have confidence in each other, the chemistry with each other. They were cheering. Steve Krall made a basket late in that game last night, and they were cheering him on. You could hear it from the bench. And it's just, I do think that chemistry is a strength of this team, and that'll help along the way.
For sure. And you mentioned the freshman four. And before I get into that, the bench cheering, Jordan Davis made his first shot of his career last night. And they kind of went wild for him too. So that was cool to see. The freshmen you mentioned, the top three guys have really kind of established themselves in the rotation. And I think that's going to be really fun for Greg Gard to work in, because when you get to Big Ten or Big Ten play, their minutes are going to change a little bit. You're not going to rely on them as much as they have early on in the season. But I think it's going to be fun to see how Greg Gard kind of deploys them for a few minutes, because I think each one gives the team just a little bit of a different dynamic. Like, you see what Jonathan Davis can do. By the way, is he going Jonathan now, or is Johnny still cool?
Apparently he's going officially as Jonathan, but when I did that, you know, when I went to lacrosse and did the story on him and Jordan, I specifically asked him, do you want Jonathan or Johnny? And he said Johnny. So I have not talked to him at all this year. It's been, you know, it's been weird with interviews, the Zoom schedules, that I have not talked to either one of the freshmen yet. But I did ask the UW official, and Jonathan is the way we're going until further notice.
All right, I can do that. All right, so Jonathan Davis, he brings just a little bit of a different athleticism, and I think he's shown against lesser opponents. I always want to give that caveat, because it's easier when you know you're better than the other team to do some of these things, but he's just shown some instincts of, like, he had that rim run, I think it was in the first game, and got the offensive rebound and had a putback. It just some of the instincts and some of the feel for the game that made him a Division I recruit, but kind of showed that, like, he was ready to play right away, which I think is cool, and I think is going to be fun to see how Greg Gard kind of inserts that into games for little stretches when they get some of these really good teams. Because, I mean, you watch, we've talked about it many times, but this Big Ten is going to be crazy, and you watch Michigan State last night against Duke. I know you were working, couldn't watch it, but I mean, that Michigan State team's loaded. You got Iowa that's loaded and it's going to score 90 points a game or something. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Gard does with this lineup and how he just kind of injects guys in different spots for stretches of games.
Yeah. One thing, Jonathan Davis, the one thing I've really noticed, he's got this kind of this hanging jumper. He just glides through the air, and it's, you know, I can't think of a guy that I've seen on this roster in recent times that compares to that. I do think like, if this team's missing something, and we've talked about this before, it's athleticism, and a guy that when all hell breaks loose during possession can make something happen with penetration or just getting to the rim. And I think Jonathan Davis is a guy that can do that. I like you, am interested to see what Gard does in terms of playing time, because he's going to need these guys. I feel like there's going to be a positive COVID test at some point or two, yep. And he's going to have to go deep on his bench. So it's important early in the season to get those guys as much experience as possible, so you're not kind of thrown into the wolves later in the year. So I'm curious. Typically the games get tougher and the bench shortens. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case this year. I don't know how much Crowell is going to play, but I think that top nine, Greg Gard's going to use those guys a lot.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You're kind of like the last big three sport that hasn't had a COVID situation, because men's hockey's going through it now. So are you just counting down the days?
Thanks for the jinx. Hey, thanks for the jinx.
You're welcome. All right, so make sure you guys are following on Madison.com, all of Jim's work. He mentioned Tyler Wall's story coming later this week, obviously the Marquette game on Friday. But kind of going back, make sure you go read his story on Will Ryan, son of Bo Ryan, who coached Green Bay, who the Badgers played last night. Really good story on kind of his introduction into coaching, kind of his rise to a Division I program. I thought it was crazy, those stories about having to basically recruit the team on the fly, like weeks after or in the few weeks of getting hired, for both situations he's been in. That was really interesting how he was able to do that, especially this year with the pandemic going on.
Yeah, I knew it was bad at Wheeling. I knew that he only inherited five guys, but I didn't realize that he had gotten up to 21 players. So they'd recruited like 16 players. And it's not even a full staff. It's two graduate students, one of which left. I mean, he had to replace a graduate student who got a better job. He ended up having 21 players on his roster and redshirted seven of them. And they finished fifth place when they were picked to finish last in a 12-team league. So, he was fun to talk to. I mean, very, very much like Bowen, that he was talkative. And that interview was fun. I did that like 3 weeks ago.
Gotcha. All right, so make sure you're following all Jim's work there on Madison.com. And as we start wrapping up the show, just, this is the busiest time, obviously, for us, but probably the most fun time. If you follow our content, you subscribe, make sure you check that out. We have I think it's a 5 months for $5 deal going on right now. So you get through, you know, Badgers men's hockey and men's basketball, men's and women's basketball, men's and women's hockey, football season, and then the draft coverage. I mean, you get a ton of stuff for $5 if you subscribe right now. For football this week, we've already got our film room up on Graham Mertz, kind of the mistakes that he made footwork-wise and technique-wise against Northwestern. You can check out and what he's got to do to avoid those against Indiana. Hopefully have a feature on Jalen Berger coming this week. Still waiting on availability for him, but we'll see. Ton of basketball stuff from Jim. Like I mentioned, the Marquette game coming up, the Tyler Wall story. Just a really busy but really fun time for sports. And we're all just, like we mentioned before, walking on this tightrope, hoping we can get as many games in as we can before something bad happens. But Jim and I will both be at Camp Randall for the Indiana game on Saturday, assuming it happens. So make sure you're following us on Twitter. Jim Polzine, WSJ for Jim. Seabart, WSJ for me. For Jim Polzine, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you very much for listening.